listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Check my math and follow along. 88.3 over 100 is not 0.883. We exponentiate. Euler's number raised to not 0.883 is 2.418. Multiply by 1,000 to result 2,418. Add 401. Result 2,819. Multiply 25. 5 by 9 is 45. 5 by 1 is 5, and 4 is 9. 5 by 8 is 40. 5 by 2 is 10, and 4 is 14. 20 by 9 is 180. 20 by 1 is 20, and 10 is 30. 20 by 8 is 160. 20 by 2 is 40, and 10 is 50. Sum 70,475. Add 404. 70879. Multiply 11. Result 779669. Add 20. 779,689. Divide 10. Result 776.89. Square root 88.3 WRCT.
Mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up.
Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You are listening to 88.3 FM W.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
I have a number of things I want to go over with you today, and the first one is a really strange reason to oppose helping homeless people. This is just bizarre. In the state of Tennessee, they've been debating a bill dealing with homelessness. And in the midst of the debate, Republican State Senator Frank Nicely stood up. He's from Strawberry Plains, Tennessee. And he said, hey, you know what? Being homeless isn't the end of the world. Hitler was able to do things and make something of himself even after being homeless for a little while. Now, he's not saying killing Jews is good, but why do you go to Hitler as an example of someone who entered the history books after being homeless? It's bizarre.
Speaker, I haven't given you all a history lesson in a while, and I want to give you a little history on homelessness.
Please.
1910, Hitler decided to live on the streets for a while. So for 2 years, Hitler lived on the streets and practiced his oratory and his body language and how to connect with masses, and then went on to lead a life that got him in the history books. So a lot of these people, it's not a dead end. They can come out of these homeless camps and have a productive life, or in Hitler's case, a very unproductive life.
God, I get he's not saying, you know, it was delightful. Hitler was homeless, and then he came out and he was able to kill 6 million Jews. I get that he's not saying that, but why do you have to point to Hitler? And also, if Hitler chose to be homeless in order to practice his oratory skills and body language, most homeless people are not trying to build public speaking skills by being homeless. Mention, you know, the singer Jewel at one point was really living in her car. She really was. Horrible backstory to it. Or actor Jim Carrey once lived in his car on his sister's front lawn, although that's not even really being homeless in the sense that a lot of people are homeless. Or why Hitler? And it's this very strange, it's not an obsession, but it's like, why are they thinking of Hitler so much to make positive points? And here the point is, listen, it's not that bad to be in these homeless camps. People can end up in the history books, even after being homeless. Look at Hitler. These people are very strange, and I think that there's something extraordinarily wrong with them. I want to talk about the latest grift scam from the Republican Party. There's a very good article in Truthout about this. Trump and Republicans are raking in millions of dollars with these fascist fundraising emails. Now, many of you have written to me about these emails. Many in our audience, they don't even know how they ended up on the Republican email list and on Trump's email list. Truthout's report is it's mind-blowing. Trump remains the highest-totaling fundraiser in the Republican Party. Experts say the fundraising emails fueling his political ambitions increasingly echo conspiracy theories and employ fascist rhetoric. That's true. I've seen them. Trump's fundraising emails helped generate $378 million in 2020, and there's $110 million in Trump's war chest as of a couple months ago. That's more than what's been reported by the RNC and DNC combined. The fundraising success suggests Trump's messaging resonates with many Republicans. Trump's deceptive fundraising emails are not just obnoxious. If you're a supporter, subscribe to Trump's email list, you're told sinister forces are destroying a nation that rightfully belongs to patriots like you. Only Trump can save America from humiliation. This is classic 20th century rhetoric. We don't have to say Hitler, because it's really more like Mussolini. It's really more like others. Some appeals appear to operate like a sweepstakes, letting you meet Trump in person or go to a top secret rally. Now, we've already talked before about how at many of these things, Trump's not there. There was one promoted as like have lunch with Trump, but only Lindsey Graham was going to be there. They also use language like Trump's inner friend circle, where a select few will be exposed to confidential information he won't trust other people with. And that is similar to the QAnon stuff. It's similar to these, you know, fights against elite cabals and so on and so forth. This is classic. This is a clinic in reactionary fear-mongering. We live in a society where so many people just freely will turn money over to rich people that openly despise them. And that is what we are seeing here. This is the giving culture where these reactionaries who Trump has spent, listen, guys, we've said it before. Trump, as a rich guy from New York, has spent his life trying to be kept away from the people that make up the bulk of his base, the people giving the small dollar donations, because that's all that they can afford at the end of the day. And it is what his campaign has been built on. Trump doesn't like these people, but he will grift them out of every last dollar. The emails are also really a study into cults. And I know I've said this before, but I've recently been reading about the Charles Manson cult. And when you read the interviews that the cult members would give to law enforcement when it all kind of fell apart, the language and the demeanor and the tone is so similar to that which we hear from Trump supporters today. And, you know, as I've said before, I don't want anyone getting scammed. I don't want anyone getting scammed. And at the same time, at what point do you say these people are determined to be scammed? They're determined to give Trump the money. They're falling for the fascistic rhetoric. They're doing all of it. I don't know. I don't know at what point we say we just kind of can't protect these people anymore. I don't know when we get there, but it seems like we're probably pretty close. Very quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but some people wrote to me again and they said, what is going on with the N-word being used by failed former President Donald Trump? This is starting to get really strange. I almost think Trump's trying to just appear to be provocative. Trump multiple times now has referred to nuclear or nuclear, depending on your pronunciation preference, as the N-word. And now he did it again at some kind of event. I don't know if this is a fundraiser or a party or what it is. Trump now saying, hey, everybody went crazy when I referred to nuclear as the N-word. Take a look.
We have the greatest nuclear force in the world. You don't want to do that. You know, I call it the N-word, okay? I said that to a group of people. They said, the N-word, oh, he said a horrible thing. I said, no, the nuclear word is what I thought. He said, oh, he said a horrible thing, the N-word. And I said, no, the N-word is the nuclear word. The nuclear word is something that's not supposed to be discussed. You don't talk about it. You don't talk about it, but...
Why are people even clapping? Like, it is completely incoherent what he's saying, and people are clapping because Trump says you're not supposed to talk about the nuclear. What?
Putin's been talking about it. Yeah, he's a major country, a serious nuclear power, and he's talking about it.
Okay. So Trump now is referencing when he went on Fox News program. I don't even know what it's called. It's a program with Stuart Varney. It's called, I don't even know what the show is called. Stuart Varney's program on Fox Business. And he played the same kind of coy game.
Well, and hope to God you never have to use it, because right. that would be the tragedy of all tragedies. But if we didn't have it, we couldn't talk. But I listened to him constantly using the N-word. That's the N-word. And he's constantly using it, the nuclear word. And we never talk it. We say, oh, he's a nuclear power.
What do you guys think this is about? Is this some kind of a dog whistle where white supremacists, I'm making this up, by the way, guys. Is this a dog whistle where Trump is signaling to white supremacists, I can't go around using the real N-word, but I'm going to say the N-word and pretend I'm talking about nuclear, but I'm actually talking about the N-word. Is it a dog whistle that only some people understand? Is it Trump trying to just be provocative by using the term N-word, even if it has nothing to do with the actual N-word? I don't know what he's trying to do. It's very, very strange. One last bonus clip just about how weird things are that are going on lately. Here's Trump talking about when he met Matt Gaetz' wife. This was over the weekend, I guess, at Mar-a-Lago. It's just all very bizarre.
And I do remember when they met, he came up, I said, who the hell is that, Matt? Not that I noticed those things, but I said, who is that? I said, Matt, I don't know how well you get along, but assuming you get along, that's the one for you. And now it's you've come a long way together, haven't you? It's a great couple, and we appreciate it, and we love you both, and we're with you all the way.
Real weekend at Bernie's vibes starting to go there at Mar-a-Lago, but very strange. What's this N-word stuff about, guys? Let me know. I really don't understand it. You can find me on Twitter at dpacman. This is one of the last times I'm going to mention this because we're doing the event in a few days. Tuesday, April 19, 6 p.m., we're doing a town hall event. Town hall events are where you get to ask me questions. You get to berate me for whatever you want to berate me for. It's wide open. This will be streaming live. So if you want to listen to the town hall, it'll be live at 6 p.m. on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/PacmanLive. It won't be on the regular YouTube channel. It won't be on Facebook. It won't be on Twitch. It will only be at youtube.com/PacmanLive. Tuesday, April 19th, 6 p.m. If you want to call in, then it's going to be via Discord at davidpacman.com/discord. If you're not a member, everybody's welcome to call in. However, if you do become a member, we are going to have a priority path for you to get on the air for our paid members. Everybody will get an opportunity, but it'll be easier if you're a member, and you can sign up at joinpacman.com. So that's Tuesday, but still a full show of stuff coming up for you today. The David Pacman Show, of course, depends on your support through the membership program. We do an extra show every day for our members. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. We also have the upcoming David Pacman Show Town Hall on Tuesday, April 19th, and members will get priority access during the Town Hall, which is an amazing thing. But let's not wait. Let's hear from people right now. We take calls via Discord on Fridays at davidpacman.com/discord. And we are going to start today with John from Philly. John from Philly, you're on the air. John from Philly, please unmute yourself. You're on the air and you could talk to me if you unmuted. And last chance for John from Philly. Well, that's really too bad. That's not a particularly auspicious start. Let's put it that way. Why don't we go instead to Evan from, is it pronounced Harrogate?
It's Harrogate, David.
Harrogate. Welcome, sir.
No, thank you very much. I had a question just about kind of Argentine public opinion on the Falklands, if that's okay.
Sure.
It's kind of a three-part question. Because I'm kind of, I don't really know how to get the public and sort of government opinion on the issue. So I was just kind of wondering, do you know what the kind of public opinion or what the government think is? What is your opinion? And it might not be analogous, but do you think there's any kind of Taiwan type analogy to it at this point or not?
I don't think that with the Falklands, there's much of a Taiwan analogy, at least that I would be able to articulate. But this is a good question. It's the 40-year anniversary of the Falklands War. The Falklands are these islands off the coast of Argentina. And I am from Argentina, and I know that people may expect me to have some particular hot take or maybe even a biased view because I'm from Argentina. I mean, listen, my understanding of public opinion in Argentina is that most Argentinians believe that the Falklands should be Argentinian. My view is that that's not at all clear to me. If you look at the history, I don't know the full history of the Falklands, but you can definitely find periods in the hundreds of years ago where different populations were there to say who controlled it. I just am not enough of a student of it to say. But to me, go ahead.
I think it was French originally, and then it was kind of abandoned for a while, and then it was kind of flicked between Spanish and majority British sort of.
Yeah. And so listen, for me, sometimes you'll see Argentinian soccer matches and people unveil flags that say the Falkland Islands are Argentinian and stuff like that. For me, it's an unusual hill to look to die on. I recently saw, because of the anniversary, on Argentinian news, they brought like three veterans from that, three Argentinian veterans. And the framing of the entire segment was like, obviously the islands are Argentinian, when it's like not at all clear from history that that's the case. And I know that people on both sides will make very strong arguments. I think it's politically ambiguous at best.
Yeah, fair enough. I think because one of my friends works in the oil industry out there, I think if you have the Falkland stamp on your passport, you're not allowed to go to Argentina.
That's similar to there are Middle Eastern countries where if you've been to Israel, you're not allowed to go in. That reminds me of that. There's one other historical note I would mention. At the time 40 years ago when this war took place, it was very stupid to think that Argentina was going to be able to beat the UK in a war. Like, obviously that wasn't going to happen. And there was a very cynical nature with which there was propaganda value to appearing or attempting to fight this war because of what was going on in Argentina at the time, starting to get out of this, military dictatorship government and this type of thing. And so a lot of people would look at it and say, it seemed really stupid to think that Argentina's military could fight the UK's, and it was. And the reason was it had propaganda value to some degree.
All right. Okay. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Yeah. Good. I figured at some point someone would ask about that because of the timing, and someone did. Let's go to our friend Bitdefender from Cancun, Mexico. This is not Eric from Cancun. This is a different Cancun caller who goes by Bitdefender. Bit, you're on.
Hello, David.
Hello.
I hope you're well. I wanted to talk about something that happened in Mexico that I think some Americans ought to know, just in case something similar happens in the States.
Okay.
So the 10th of April, we had a special election of sorts, Elección de Revocación de Mandato, which is essentially an election where you go to vote to get rid of the president.
It's almost like a no confidence vote of the people, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds sort of democratic, but the reality of it is that it's something that mostly exists in autocratic countries and countries that, well, leaders that want to campaign constantly. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Especially in countries that pretend or have democratic systems that, you know, have electoral law of sorts. But you very well know that the elections are not fair and free.
Sure.
You know, Venezuela, Ecuador, some other Latin American countries have this form, and now Mexico has it. Given the rise of these forms of, you know, government and governors, do you think we will see something similar in the States?
I don't think so. I think it would be how presidential elections run, at least in theory, is so set in stone that I don't believe that there's going to be the putting in the instatement of such a mechanism. And also, you know, as you point out, one of the ideas of it, the propaganda value of it, is that you can kind of constantly be running an election, and that can sometimes help to coalesce and organize people. The Republican Party has already figured out how to do the same thing by saying Democrats are going to try to steal it, which is what they did in 2020. And so they already kind of have a mechanism to make that rallying cry. So no, I don't expect that to be instated in the United States.
Also, now that you mention it, when, you know, given the nature of electoral law in the States, what gives you so much confidence that, you know, electoral law is so set in stone? You know, me coming from a country where we have an actual federal institute dedicated to electoral management, and the States don't really have one, you know?
I mean, I don't, maybe I'm naive to think that, but the only real sense I have is that if anything was going to structurally change the way elections are done, it would be something like the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, where states can decide.
And
we'll just give our electors to the winner of the popular vote. But beyond that, there's not really any serious initiatives there. I mean, they're trying to steal it by not officially changing the big picture, but by doing voter suppression at the state level, strategic voter ID, closing polling places. They're looking to do it piecemeal rather than with any big mechanism like a public no confidence vote or that type of thing. It's just what they're doing. So I'm basing it on what I see.
Absolutely. No. Well, that's about it. Thank you, dude.
All right. Thank you. There's Bitdefender from Cancun. Let's go next to Phil from California. Phil, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, David. I had a question about propaganda in general.
Okay.
And it seems like with propaganda, it seems to have an origin where there's a voluntary actor who kind of promulgates the initial idea of propaganda and disperses it. But at what point does the propaganda become like a feedback loop, and people that are propagating it also are consuming it and falling for it?
Oh, it happens, for instance, very quickly. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to just say, for example, it seems like Putin may have fallen for his own propaganda with his initial attack on the Ukraine, and how poorly his army performed was probably partially to believe in his own propaganda about liberating Ukraine, and that he'd be welcome with open arms.
I'm not sure about that. I don't think Putin was that naive, but I think your principle is very much there. I see it much more like in the current Republican Party, where I see it the other way, where it's sort of the people that fell for the Trump is really the winner propaganda end up spreading it, and then they end up believing it because people they've convinced start repeating it themselves. So that's the feedback loop that I've seen. I don't know that the Putin example, I don't know how sure I am of the Putin example, but your idea is absolutely spot on.
Thank you, David.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the call. A nice concise call there. Let's go next to Stephanie in Texas. Stephanie, you're on the air. Stephanie in Texas, you're on the air. Please unmute and you'll be able to talk to me.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hi.
Yes, I can.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
And I owe you an apology, actually. I tried calling a couple months ago, and I got so excited that instead of unmuting my call, I hung up on you. So I apologize for that.
Oh, no.
So anyway, and I also wanted to just let you know that we're not all crazy here in Texas, but good. Just how crazy are things in Texas right now? And I wanted to ask you, thank you for the, you did a piece on the murder charges being dropped against a woman who tried to seek an abortion.
Yes.
And I, you know, there's a lot of things I could, there's a lot of things I'm trying to like, you know, to ask you about, because there's a lot of things going on here right now, but that's one of the ones I think that's really first and foremost. And do you think that that's something that my hope is it'll lose steam over time as people maybe get faced with these more, if more charges come up and people start realizing it's more of a, you know, a wild goose chase to some extent. Do you think it's going to, in your opinion, do you think it's going to start being less of an issue, or do you think it's become, people are going to try and push it more?
I think unfortunately, Stephanie, I think the whole charges for abortions thing, I think it's going to be a new tool that we're going to see a lot of. And in particular, in late June, the Supreme Court is going to issue a decision on a state abortion case. And their decision could effectively overturn Roe v. Wade. If that happens, there are 22 states that essentially ban abortion. Those laws will then become the law of the land. And I think you're going to see tons of people charged criminally for seeking abortions. And it's going to be a dystopian nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so unfortunate because, you know, obviously the Roe v. Wade is a huge tool that people have been able to take advantage of. And it's just not, you know, I'm hoping that that won't be the case. But yeah, unfortunately, like you said, in June, we kind of have a deadline here. Now, have you interviewed Beto O'Rourke yet? Or is that something that if you have I missed it? And if you haven't, do you plan on doing that?
He's not been on. We're interested in having him on. Mm-hmm. So far, he's not shown any interest in being on. Okay. So if people want to tweet to Beto and say, hey, go to the David Pakman Show, we would love to have him.
Yeah, I think I follow him. And I've also volunteered to phone bank and not knock on doors for him. So hopefully they'll get some word out there, but it's just, I'm hoping that he'll have some pull if he gets elected. Hopefully it's just been so kind of crazy. And I get so frustrated when people say, we don't like it, then move. You know, that's a really, generic thing to say to people, because we can't just move. It's like our home and our business is here and
people
everything
have families
else, so it's like,
and everything. Yeah, yeah, no, it's crazy.
For sure.
And, Stephanie, and listen, can you get a good bagel in Texas, or is that impossible?
I guess it depends. If I want to go drive through for bagel, I go to the Einstein Brothers, which I'm sure is like, you know, pretty basic. Oof. But I make my own bagels in the air fryer. Actually, it's pretty funny. Like I make them with, I have an air fryer, and I found a really good recipe for, it's not like your traditional bagel. So it's a little bit more like it's a little moister. It's like I use Greek yogurt and flour. So it's just like three ingredients, basically.
Oh,
and
boy.
I put it in my air fryer. And
sounds
it's really
more like
good.
It sounds more like a cake than a bagel.
It kind of is. But it's like, it's really good because it's like, you know, it's higher in protein. It's a little bit better for you than like all the carbs in the regular bagels.
Sure, sure.
We're just
all
trying,
right, Stephanie.
We're trying all kinds of crazy
it
things.
Sounds complicated down there, but I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah. Well, just kind of keep us in your thoughts and follow us, because we've got a lot of interesting things going on here.
Absolutely. Bagels aside, a lot going on in Texas. There's Stephanie from Texas.
100%.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but I'm still taking more of your calls. Just hang on. We will be right back. All right, let's go back to Discord. DavidPakman.com/Discord. We're hearing from people in the audience, the most important people. Let's go to Keir from Scotland. Keir, you're on the air.
Hi, David. I just wondered if you had any thoughts. I don't know if you're aware of what's happened in the UK today, but our Prime Minister for the last months started out denying that he'd had any parties in Number 10 Downing Street. Then he said he didn't know that it was a party. and then he said, oh, yes, it was a party, but I wasn't aware. And now today he's been handed out... him, his wife, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer have all been handed out £50 fines for breaching lockdown rules that they wrote. And they are all, and there's over 50 now people who live in Downing Street that have all been handed out these fines. And he's got over a 75% dislike with the public today in polls today. I was just wondering if you had any comment on it, or if you thought, because he's refusing to resign, as is his chancellor, to just... Yeah.
Listen, on the resignation, I can't comment on the resignation piece. You know, it's really for those. I want to leave that to voters and others in the UK to comment on. But if there's anything good about this, now we can look at it and say a £50 fine is pathetically low. And you're sure that's true. But I think it's good that at least they're being held to the standards, where in some places it would just be excused. If that's the punishment that should be assigned, I'm glad that it's being assigned if the rules were broken. Also, like, how much of this has to do with the what is the definition of a party in the UK?
Well, this is the thing, is that he wrote the rules. Him,
right.
The people around him wrote the rules about what a party was, but he doesn't seem to know himself what a party is, which is absolutely insane to me. I'm just, while I've got you here as well, yeah. Do you think this is going to push perhaps towards Scotland getting another independence campaign?
This specifically, Boris Johnson's party, you mean?
Oh, just the litany of things that he's done over the last few years of just lying in Parliament, illegally prorogued Parliament. He lied to the Queen. He's just, I could let the list of things I could say. He's just, I'm just wondering, like, is this going to be the final thing where the people of Scotland are just going to say, enough is enough, we're done with you?
I don't know what will be the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back, but my sense for several years in reading about Scotland has been that there's at least some clamoring for another independence vote. I mean, you tell me, is that the sense you get?
I think so, yes. I think there's a lot of people who previously either didn't vote or voted to stay in the union because of, again, lies told in the thing, told in the referendum, the run-up to the referendum, who have now just had enough. They're fed up with the constant lies and just the constant nonsense coming out of Westminster. They just want done.
I wonder. I'm totally sensitive to that. And, you know, it's the people of Scotland that need to decide. I'm not taking a position one way or the other. I'm wondering if you, like, are you aware, and does it concern you that there may be economic difficulties in Scottish independence? Is that a discussion?
No, that's not really a problem. There's a lot of sort of people who are like, oh, you take more from England than you don't. It's more complex than that, because we have a lot of offshore oil, and there's a lot of other ways, like we can make a lot of money out of tourism. The real problem is we can't have a referendum, a legally binding referendum, unless Westminster says we're allowed to.
Right.
And Boris Johnson has outright stated he will not allow that to happen.
Sure.
So even if the MSPs decide that they're going to have a referendum, he can just ignore it and say, no, you're not getting independence. I don't care what the referendum you had says.
Right. That is a difficult situation.
Yeah. Very difficult.
It doesn't really feel like self-determination in that sense.
It's a bit of a sticky situation. I don't know how you get out of it.
Yeah. Well, Keir, I really appreciate your call and for you filling us in on what's going on there.
Oh, well, thank you for your time, sir.
All right. There is Keir from Scotland. A beautiful phone call for sure. Let's go next to Raul in Los Angeles. Raul, go ahead.
Hey, I'm just curious. I've got two questions, I guess kind of a vague, complicated one and a bit more of an easy, specific one. I'll let you choose. Which do you want?
Well, I'll take the easy one any day.
How do you think the left will maintain power during the midterm?
It's not clear that they will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not looking good.
That's kind of how I feel. I feel like it's going to kind of be this constant cycle of every 2 years, the general power structure switches between either the president who was just elected or who won during the midterm. And it's just kind of a chaotic system. And I, as a young person, feel kind of lost within it. I'm more of a leftist, but neither party really speaks to me. You know, last candidate was Bernie, and now I'm just kind of lost feeling.
So what do you plan to do in November? Do you even plan to, what's your plan?
I'll vote Democrat. That's kind of just what I've always done. I kind of tend to just vote for who tends to my politics.
Sure.
But I also kind of just prefer to focus on local stuff because that's where my vote actually matters. A lot of young people think that just because of the Electoral College, their vote doesn't matter when local stuff you actually have an impact on.
Sure. Well, I think it's wise for you to pay attention. I think it makes sense to vote in the midterms nationally, but to focus locally makes a lot of sense to me. If more people did it, the left would be stronger.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a flaw of the left is I see a lot of people having strong ideals, but not exactly context within politics to vote.
Certainly, certainly. You in Northern or no, sorry, you said L.A. What part of L.A. are you in?
San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's north of the city, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's LA County as well. You know, it's largest metropolitan in North America, something like that. So
that's what they tell me. All right. Well, I appreciate the call.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. There's Raul from LA, disheartened, but staying engaged, which I think is a great thing. Let's go to William from Las Vegas. William, you're on the air.
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. I just got back from Vegas a few days ago.
I know. I was actually down at the Strip. I was kind of keeping an eye to see if I spotted you, but chances are I was pretty far from you. So, sir, I was wondering if you could help me craft a water cooler argument, which I'm sure a lot of other people are having.
Okay.
And it may sound off the rails, but we'll end it together. So from my understanding, in the early 2000s, school districts started to teach Common Core math. And it took a while for teachers to get trained on how to teach Common Core math with a lot of resources, curriculum, testing. And then it's still working out, so we're actually using that as the standard. So knowing that or understanding that, with the argument that critical race theory is being taught right now, wouldn't it make sense that it took time to teach teachers a graduate level, from what I understand, a social or humanities elective? And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Would it make sense that it took time to instruct teachers how to teach this very complicated theory from K to 12, even though it's not necessarily in the curriculum? And every time I have this argument, my question is, well, which curriculum is teaching this? Which public school, because they all publish their curriculum. I've not gotten an answer on that. But that's kind of where I'm formulating my argument as we go towards the midterms.
What is the argument you're trying to make? You're trying to make the argument that critical race theory just isn't being taught. I mean, it's basically not being taught. That's true as far as K through 12 is concerned. But what is the argument you're trying to formulate?
So you're right. So it's basically an association with when people say they're teaching critical race theory, I say, well, how is this happening? Well, they train teachers for years how to teach Common Core math, and we've not heard anything about teachers being taught critical race theory. So basically it's a debunking of that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, let me see if I understand. So you're saying we knew for so long that this thing called Common Core math was coming in. And we know teachers were being trained on how to teach it because the teachers yes. can't teach it unless they're trained. If yes. critical race theory is really everywhere, how is it everywhere given that the teachers haven't even been trained how to teach it?
We landed it safely. That's exactly the point I was trying to make. Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the problem is here's how the right will respond. They'll say, no, here's the thing. The colleges that the teachers went to, their entire framework is critical race theory. So the teachers already have the knowledge. They'll say something like that. So I don't know that you would convince too many people, unfortunately.
And my maneuver to that is, well, teachers don't teach anything that's not on the curriculum.
They'll say, but they are. That they'll just say, no, but they are teaching it. They're teaching it.
Oh, so it's the no true Scotsman that they'll come back with.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's an uphill battle, my friend, but I'm glad you're thinking about it.
Well, I'm definitely thinking local, and hopefully you enjoyed Las Vegas while you were here.
I did.
Good. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Very good. Take care. There is a beautiful phone call from Las Vegas. Hard to beat that. Why don't we go next to, let's go to Casey from Oklahoma City. Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, David, you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
With the Texas Heartbeat Act, Oklahoma Planned Parenthood, I mean, they saw a jump, I think, in roughly like 2,500% in patients. But Governor Stitt, who's often the little brother to states and governors like, you know, DeSantis and Abbott, just signed a law that would basically upend it here in Oklahoma and ban it.
Yep.
To include like $100,000 in fines plus a 10-year prison sentence.
We did cover that story earlier this week. It's crazy what Oklahoma is doing on abortion. Yeah.
Yeah. But I find that we often talk about, at least in the counter, we talk about rape and incest, but one of the things I never hear about is teen pregnancy. And if we look at the top states, some teen pregnancy is greater than 30 per every 1,000 births. Guess what? They're all Republican states.
Of course.
South Carolina, Arizona, Alabama, Tennessee, you know, I can go down the list. Do you think it would help these pro-life people to think twice when we frame it at that the teen pregnancies who are their daughters? Do you want them to keep that child, or do they say, well, morally, my daughter should keep it?
Usually they will sidestep this issue. You're absolutely right, which is the places that have the highest rates of teen pregnancy are mostly red states. That's absolutely true. Republicans will sidestep this by saying, if we were correctly teaching abstinence only sex education, they wouldn't be getting pregnant in the first place. Now, of course, they're wrong. But they want the total package, which is ban abortion and teach abstinence only. You know it doesn't work. I know it doesn't work. But that's what they will say.
I mean, I would think the counter to that is, isn't that what you already preach in your states? And obviously it's not working.
It's not working. No, but then they'll come in and they'll say, no, but these public schools with the critical race theory and the gender stuff and the teaching kids how to have sex and these things, they'll just say it's what we want, but it's not actually happening. Teachers are injecting it into the classroom.
Yeah, and it's I left a voicemail last night about a radio station here locally. And if you go to like the FCC, they can't do anything as far as freedom of speech, which I'm all for, you know, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But the propaganda from, because they're playing like InfoWars and talking about demonic baby pedophile, all this stuff is just infuriating. And I don't know the solution to it because it's just making people stronger in their beliefs that are just untrue.
It's lunacy. It's lunacy.
Yeah.
Well, listen, good luck there in Oklahoma because it's getting pretty grim. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right, Casey, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right. There's Casey from Oklahoma, the site of a horrifying, horrifying, horrifying abortion bill. Let's go to Tristan from Boston. Tristan, you're on the air.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Cool. It occurred to me recently, have you considered writing a book?
Yes. In fact, I'm working on a proposal right now. It's a big project. It's a long process, but I am working on that right now.
Wow, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, what is the subject?
I don't want to say because we're still workshopping it, and then I might end up kind of self-cucking. You know, I don't want to do that.
Does it include elements of many subjects?
It actually does. Yeah. It's a multidisciplinary proposal.
I mean, that would feel like the main topics, the ideas for the main topics would be pretty obvious.
Well, we'll find out, won't we, Tristan?
considering your fields of expertise.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, no, when I have more to say about it, I absolutely will, but it's something I am working on.
That's actually great to hear. I would 100%. I'm totally pumped to hear that.
Well, good. It sounds like at least I'd sell one copy.
Yeah. Can't wait to see it, dude.
All right. Tristan, thank you so much.
Awesome.
All right. There's Tristan from Boston asking about a book project. Thanks to everybody who called in. My apologies to everybody I couldn't get to. We'll take calls again, and for now, we will take a very quick break and be right back. All right, let's review this week's mailbag. If you have a message for me, you can email it to info@davidpakman.com. Many, many messages come in every week. I think probably 1,000 or so. And we can only look at, 10 or so. So just understand that. Please be polite. Please be respectful. info@davidpakman.com. All right, first email this week came in from Christopher, who also signed his email Keith. I don't know. Christopher says, after this weekend's Trump rally, you talk crap about Trump. How much is your gas now compared to when Trump was in office? Well, I drive an electric car, so my gas hasn't changed, but I understand the point. How about your grocery bill? Yes, it's higher. But what does Joe Biden have to do with that? How about everything you buy bring way up with the Democratic leadership? Don't understand why you dummies can't look at numbers instead of your personal political opinion. F Biden and F you. Well, that's exactly what I do. Regardless of my political opinion, which is I prefer Biden to Trump, I have to look at the numbers when it comes to gas prices, inflation, etc. And when I look at the numbers, I see that those things are up all over the world. And I see that those are not phenomena that depend on the American president to any significant degree. I respect you too much in the audience to do my what can presidents do about gas prices rant a second, third, what it must be probably the fifth time now. So I'm not going to do that. But it is exactly because I do look at the facts that I come to the conclusions I come to. And Christopher or Keith, I don't know, is welcome to call into my show anytime, and we can talk about it. Next, Gil wrote in, also about the Trump rally over the weekend, and said, "You seem to laugh at Donald Trump. I think you don't know very much. USA is a corporation. USA Inc. since yesterday. USA become a republic like if was before. And one more thing, Donald know more than you about political rules in Michigan." Well, I couldn't possibly say it any better myself. And this is just such a wholesale destruction of my ideology and worldview that I won't even try to respond to Gil because it's just too much. It's just overwhelming. Okay. Next email is from Darius. Darius says, "New subscriber here. You killed Air with Darlene. David, I stumbled on your YouTube videos a couple of years ago and have been evangelizing you to my friends and finally decided it's time to pay for solid journalism. So I am now a subscriber supporting the work you do. I love it. Just remember, I do commentary, not journalism. Important distinction." Darius goes on to say, "However, your interview with Diana Swafford, it was Darlene Swafar. Okay, but it doesn't matter. I know who you mean. Put you in the category of why doesn't this guy have his own MSNBC or CNN show? Your interview, oh boy, was absolutely brilliant. You were respectful, even complimentary. Your poker face was amazing and critical to keep her from walking off. You parsed the oil issue brilliantly. Dude, you need an agent to up your game and get a broadcast cable show. This country needs people like you. Please try to do more interviews like these." Well, I really appreciate that. I have an agent. We are not trying to get me on MSNBC or CNN or Fox or whatever. I'm very happy with what I'm doing. I don't want to have 10 bosses at any of those places. I don't think they want me there either. But I so appreciate the kind words from Darius about this. And we are trying to get more of those interviews lined up with the 2020 candidates on the right and on the left. We're doing it all. We're doing it all. Next, let's go to an email from Teresa. Teresa said, "Is there a way I can gift more than one membership at a time? David said on air that there were over 600 hoping to become members. I'd like to offer several gifts anonymously. Thank you." Yeah, so Teresa is asking a perfect question. One of the biggest things people in the audience wanted was they wanted to be able to gift memberships on our website. They would write in, they would say, "Sir, I have a membership, but I want to give some memberships away. Can I do that?" And up until 2 weeks ago, the answer was no. But we listened. We have a new plugin on our website, joinpacman.com, which when you go through the checkout now, there's a box and it says, is this a gift? And if you check the box, your membership will be added to our queue, which we can give away. We've given away about 100 memberships so far, thanks to gifts. But we do have now, it's not even 600, it's now 670 people waiting for a membership. So we are going to try, Teresa, to make this a possibility where you can just do 10 at a time, 20 at a time, 30, you know, just dump memberships in. We're going to try. But in the meantime, you can still gift individual memberships one at a time. What a generous audience. Beautiful. Spencer wrote in about my use of the term bad faith. Spencer says, hey, David, I've been watching your show for well over a year now and have a request that seems simple, but it may take some time to elaborate on the answer. Could you give a definition or explanation on the phrase bad faith in terms of political questions and comments? I personally haven't had an issue agreeing with you whenever you use it, but it may help others understand why you use that phrase to dismiss certain talking points and ideas from both the right and left. So here's the thing. There's two answers about what we mean by bad faith. The first one is you sort of know bad faith when you see it. And what I mean by that is you might remember when I appeared on the Jesse Lee Peterson show and he asked me, what is love? And I knew that it was a bad faith question to try to wrap me up into some kind of homophobic thing. And so I didn't even take it seriously. I said, you know, oh, Jesse, you know love when you see it. It's sort of ethereal. And I don't know what I said. I just kind of laughed it off. But what we mean by bad faith is that there's an intent to deceive or that you are not being genuine in your intention. So to give an example, when Marsha Blackburn asks Judge, now just soon to be Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, what is a woman? It's not that by definition, asking what a woman is a bad faith question. A five-year-old would ask lots of questions that are just, they don't have the information yet. What is a woman? Okay, great. Or a three-year-old. I don't know when kids ask, what's a woman? What's a man? But the point of the question is deceptive. It's not a mere curiosity. It's a bad faith attempt to get Judge Jackson to pigeonhole herself with one definition, which will then be turned and used against her for political reasons. So with bad faith, you have to understand context. Bad faith is sort of like a dog whistle. The idea of a dog whistle is the same way that if you blow a dog whistle, the dogs hear it, but humans don't, or at least not as loud. Okay. It's the same type of thing with dog whistles, where if you didn't understand, listen, imagine that you're from a society that has not had contact with the West, call it, okay? And I say to you, yeah, you know, oh, I'm trying to think of a good example. If I say to you, yeah, we're going to look into the people that control Hollywood, like George Soros and Steven Spielberg, right? And I list a bunch of Jewish people. Unless you know what to listen for, you don't realize that that's an anti-Semitic trope. And much like with a dog whistle, you have to be conditioned to hear it. You also have to understand context to be able to identify bad faith questions. I hope that I'm being clear. I hope that I'm being clear in this, but an important question for sure. Dave wrote in, and Dave says, about my story on Republican COVID deaths. David, you should have mentioned their base is substantially older than the Democrats. I would bet out of the 73,000 Florida deaths you mentioned, you can add another 20,000 because they are older voters, 60s to 90s. I bet 60% are Republican at least. Great show. Yeah, we just don't have the numbers. The question here is about the partisan death gap in COVID. We know it skews towards Republicans. We just don't know by how much, and we don't know if by enough to make a difference in any midterm elections. But I welcome any information we might have about that. Keith wrote in with an idea. Here's an idea from Keith. David, sir, as your show is an independent operation, I know maintaining a workable revenue stream is an ongoing effort. I have a one-word solution for you. Reruns. Reruns made the creators of shows like Friends and Seinfeld billionaires, or very nearly so. Why not you? Reruns, David, reruns. Well, I appreciate the support, Keith, but there is a difference between the marble rye and its replay value as a Seinfeld episode and what was in the news on August 10th of 2012. There's not that much replay value to news shows. So I love the idea. In practice, I don't know if it works, but what does work is we will sometimes weave together themed episodes where we say, let's take the issue of climate and make an episode out of our best interviews about climate change. We've done that and people generally like it. So that works. Just reruns. I just don't know. They're good for a few months, but I don't think anyone's going to buy them. But I appreciate the thinking about how to grow revenue. Last email today is from Doug, who also signs his email Brian. I don't know why people do this. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Doug says, David, please refrain from using the phrase guys or you guys. It's disrespecting the women in your audience. Consider using folks or you folks. Yeah, this is a regional thing. In New England, it's very growing up, you just used guys. It was inclusive of everybody. And I'd never used folks. I never used yous. I never used y'all. I certainly don't intend to disrespect any women. But if you agree with Doug or Brian, maybe you agree with Brian and disagree with Doug. I have no idea. This is from Doug/Brian. If you agree, disagree, let me know your thoughts. Is it offensive when I casually say, guys, I don't know if I can take this Republican BS anymore. Am I being disrespectful to women when I say that? Let me know. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com to instantly access the bonus show. Also, remember that on Tuesday, April 19, 6 p.m. Eastern, we'll be doing the next David Pakman Show viewer town hall. It will be live only on our second YouTube channel, Pakman Live. That's youtube.com/.
WRCT, insane from way out.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best. The smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh, yeah. yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
With your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.